Moncrief on News Talk.
Nan, here, have some water. Here you go.
I'm not well, Kelly.
Did I poison you? Because, I mean, I did, didn't I? I mean, I followed the recipe.
Come here, Kelly. Come here. You're
scaring me now.
Come here. For your own good. I've been treated very unfairly. I'm hungry, Kelly.
That's Generation Z. You can stream all episodes now on Channel 4. James Dempsey joins us once again. So, more zombies? Is there any way to do zombies that hasn't been done a gazillion times before?
I would say yes and no, right? So obviously, the zombie apocalypse narrative is a well-worn path at this stage. And kind of, I think what people always talk about in the kind of media literacy of zombies is that they're reflecting something about society at a given time, right? Mm-hmm. They're used as like a vehicle for that. And this comes from Ben Wheatley, who's like a British filmmaker who I would best describe as being someone who makes really critically lauded flops, right? Like, as in, like he's got some great titles attached to him. Kill List is a really excellent kind of spooky movie from about 15 years ago. Field in England, High Rise, etc. But like, none of them are box office behemoths, if you get me, right? And his version of zombies here, I thought originally was really interesting, right? So it opens with this chemical spill in a kind of, let's just say, Cotswoldy town, somewhere in England, South England anyway. And a military van thing spills over a chemical load and in doing so infects the residents of a like retirement home. So that I thought was kind of originally interesting, yeah. Right? So we have these older people who are on the fringes, you know, left to fend for themselves, but left by themselves by society that has forgotten them as they, you know, approach their own debts and retirements, etc. Right? And suddenly this virus takes hold of them and they are not fast running zombies, right? Like in the Cillian Murphy style.
These are like zombies with Zimmer frame.
Is that what the Z is for, right? But they do regain their strength.
Okay.
They do, any illnesses they had have faded away, but they also have all of their mental faculties along with a great desire to eat the flesh of the youth, right?
Okay.
So into that comes then some very heavy-handed metaphors about Brexit, about taking back control, about the generational divide between, we'll say, the Gen Z teenagers who are played by multiple people in this, you know, who are taking drugs and having poorly thought through sex and doing all the kinds of things that British teenagers seem to be doing on TV. While also being fodder for this rampaging, you know, 15 septuagenarians who are feasting on their brains, right?
So is the metaphor that the zombies are Brexiteers and all these dissolute youths aren't paying attention to what's happening to society around them?
Essentially, yes, right?
Okay, yes.
Now, that kind of probably had enough mileage to sustain a two-hour flop film that was critically lauded, right? But instead we get 6 one-hour parts here. And they're going for a very tonal mishmash here, right? So you have incredibly, like, almost like, you know, Dario Argento, like, gore and violence that is definitely harkening back to the, you know, the kind of Night of the Living Dead trilogy, you know, George A. Romero style, right? But also there's, like, definite nods to Threads, that nuclear, like, drama from the 1980s, in the sense that the military is brought in and there's subplots involving drug dealing stepfathers and love, you know, romance between the teens. There's just a lot of cooks in the kitchen going on here, right? And essentially, if your main narrative device is suddenly this granny wants to eat her granddaughter's brains, there's actually enough to sustain, I would say, there's enough drama and peril in that before we need to add in all the other multiple plots. It's definitely meant to be tongue-in-cheek, nudge-nudge.
Okay.
But not like Shaun of the Dead way, right? Which is obviously a very obvious horror comedy. And for me, nothing ever quite landed, right? Like, as in, the moments of shocking violence were shocking, but kind of silly. And the kind of peril was perilous, but not perilous enough, in the sense that often I was kind of watching these annoying teens going, actually, would I miss you? You know, right? Like, oh, maybe it'd be better if you do get caught. And All In, by the sixth episode, my patience had worn out for it, and I was certainly waiting for the nuclear bomb to drop, right?
Yeah.
Certainly, I was watching this with my fiance beside me on the couch the day after our stag do. So we were in a good zombified mode for consuming. He was enjoying it an awful lot more than me. So I will say there may well be an audience for it. It just isn't me.
Okay, but it hasn't affected the marriage.
Not yet.
No. Right, so the next our next show is The Pasta Queen. You can stream all episodes of season one now on Amazon Prime Video. Here's a clip.
Now it's time. I'm going to grab and put it on top. Excellente. Now we've got burrata. What I'm going to do here, I'm going to take a little cloth, give it a little shake to help it along. Inside the burrata, the stracciatella. This is going to explode over it, okay? Ecco, look at that. A little bit of basil to give it that. They look gorgeous. Look at this. It's gonna be messy though, eh? Get ready. My makeup is gonna spill all over the place.
Now, James, whatever about zombies finding it hard to be original, cook goes around Italy and then brings back pasta and makes recipes.
Yeah.
Not the most original.
The twist is she's Italian, right? So, right. So I was unfamiliar with the pasta queen, the self-styled Nadia Caterina Muno. Now, she is an Italian who has spent a lot of time living, obviously, in Italy, outside Rome, lived in the UK for a while, and has since moved to a big mansion in Florida. And during the pandemic, her tween daughter was getting into TikTok, so she herself just wanted to see what the platform was like, and saw someone making a terrible lasagna and thought, I could do that, and has since amassed millions of TikTok followers for her series The Pasta Queen, in which she essentially makes recipes from her kitchen. And this is a vehicle for her to make pasta in my kitchen, if you get me, right? In that sense that Amazon thought, this is someone who has amassed a huge following. We can just send her around Italian. We won't have to pay for a translator. We'll get her looking at, you know, mussel farms and sourdough bread and tomatoes and cheese and et cetera, et cetera. And she understands what this show is. Now, I will say the producer of the show is a woman named Kat Sullivan, who has produced for Netflix Is It Cake and Nailed It.
Oh,
and if you know the kind of wry tone that those shows go, which I have to admit I didn't warm particularly to ever.
Is It Cake is like shriekingly bad. Right. There's no wryness there. They're like, you know, the subtlety of a jackhammer.
Sure, yeah, right. Well, it's the same. That woman, Kat Sullivan, produces this. And I would say there's a more gentle touch right here. For instance, so Nadia... The show is incredibly camp, right? Like, as in, when she's reciting the list of ingredients, there's like a fan blowing and her hair is like billowing as she turns from quick cut to quick cut to quick cut in a very kind of YouTube-y TikTok style, right? She also is going for like a Sofia Vergara in Modern Family style, I'm a kooky immigrant.
Yeah.
But I also, like, while cooking up these recipes in her mansion in Florida, so I really don't, you know, I kind of don't want to know how she's voting tomorrow. Right? but like, All In, I actually found the whole show kind of fun, in the sense that now it is November, the weather, like, it's four, you know, it's getting dark by like 4 o'clock, and she's there traveling around Italy in the sunshine, with harkening back to White Lotus season 2, where everything is beautifully lit and she's like this stunning woman. I also kind of liked the warts and all of it, you know. In the first episode, her 4-year-old daughter comes in to try a bit of the pasta and is not at all interested in eating any of the tomatoes and wants to pick them all out.
Okay, that's
so
good.
So I felt there was like, yeah, okay, authenticity in big inverted commas here, but like, at least a producer who knows that when you catch something a little bit interesting and a little bit, you know, authentic on camera, you should just probably leave it in the show.
Yeah.
So look, the other thing I would say about this is, streamers are an unusual place to launch your kind of culinary empire. But at the same time, if you're going to launch on one, it makes sense to launch on one that is also attached to a massive retailer. And I kind of expected there to be colanders and pots. And
oh, there will be.
I'm sure there will be. But so far, there's only books. But all in, like, yeah, I found this like a fun little silly romp through Italy and nice looking pasta dishes that I will never make. But, you know, a very easy half hour show.
Yeah, so the structure of each show is we're in a bit of Italy, I talk to a few people, and then it ends with they're making one dish or multiple?
Multiple dishes, and then also doing a bit of like Italianisms, as in explaining gestures, explaining the history of various pasta dishes. A bit like the old kind of segments you would see on Bake Off back with like Mel and Sue when they used to, you know, explain the history of like shortbread or whatever, right? But like, what I will say is she is a very game participant in this. She knows the product that she's selling, which is not pasta, but rather the pasta queen kingdom that like she's trying to, you know, hawk. And she understands how to do that in a very charming way.
Yeah. Okay, our next show is called Before. There are new episodes every Friday on Apple TV+. Here's a clip.
You know me. Has this ever happened to you? Feeling like you're in somebody else's dream?
Constantly. Like right now, I feel like I'm a butterfly, dreaming I'm a man.
They let you smoke that in here?
What? It's medicinal. Are you gonna eat that?
No, I can't.
So, who is this kid anyway? Client?
No, he just showed up on his own out of nowhere.
Maybe you're connected, you know, spiritually. You say you never met before.
Oh, don't start with that shit.
What shit?
You know what I'm talking about.
Half the cultures on this planet believe in some kind of spiritual world, some kind of continuity of existence.
Right, because people will cling to any half-assed theory about a spiritual world in order to avoid facing the truth.
Yeah, now, I've read a couple of reviews of this, and they seem to differ. And there seems to be disagreement about Billy Crystal because he's kind of playing against type and as to whether people find that convincing or not.
Yeah, I'm a bit on the fence about it as well, I would say, right? Which is kind of frustrating when you're asking for my opinion. So basically, right, he is clearly playing strongly against type because this is a kind of spooky, creepy thriller mystery. He plays a child psychologist. So on the one hand, I could understand why you would cast someone like him in the sense that he is known for comedic chops. And obviously, a child psychologist who's interacting with a child probably shouldn't be the most severe, angry-looking, you know, type you've ever seen, but rather someone who's kind of warm. And the bits where he's interacting with him work quite well. The rest of it is all just very repetitive. That's my biggest issue with it. Now, first of all, when I sat down and I saw 30-minute episodes, I was oh my God, yes, right? 10 of them, less enthused. Some of them run for even only 25 minutes, and yet still they felt like stretched beyond capacity. The story involves Billy Crystal as Eli Adler, this very successful child psychologist in New York, who is in mourning as his late wife took her own life, and he's still in mourning after that. And he's sort of pulled back into the fray of child psychology when a mute / 17th century Dutch speaking child turns up at his door in the shape of Noah, who has had some sort of traumatic event happen to him that is very, 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 very slowly doled out over the remaining 10 episodes of the show. Yeah. And he is then brought in to help solve whatever happened to Noah. And in all of his investigation and psychological processing of Noah, he discovers increasing links to his own wife's death, which would seem to cross some many professional boundaries that perhaps a really important child psychologist would remove themselves from. But instead, this is a TV show, so he dives straight in. So all in, like, this is like just typical Apple TV problem. They attach a star to a vehicle and they shoot it very nicely, but there's just not quite enough to sustain it. And that remains Apple's problem because they don't license shows from someone else. You know, even if Netflix is making a lot of bad shows at the moment and cancelling them after one season, they still have, you know, somewhere in the world, the US office in their library that keeps people tuning in and playing over and over and over again. And Apple doesn't do that. Their pockets are filled by, you know, the things in our pockets instead, right? But here they are just paying money into shows that kind of end up going absolutely nowhere. And this one I felt was another one like that. Like the Billy Crystal of it all was fine, but again, it probably could have been one 2-hour movie and really a 90-minute movie at that. Like all in, three episodes in, I just know this isn't one I'm going to finish.
Okay.
You know?
Right. That's a shame. Yeah. Right. So those three shows are Generation Z. You can stream all episodes now on Channel 4. The Pasta Queen. You can stream all episodes of Season 1 now on Amazon Prime. And Before, new episodes every Friday on Apple TV+. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.